Blog Talk Radio.
Of David Duenas. I'm your co-host Steve Canine Kim, and joining me, as always, from what has to be the most depressed city in the world, San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, what is the mood of that city in light of that 3-1 implosion from the Golden State Warriors?
Well, you know, walking around the city the last few weeks, everywhere I went, people are talking about it. Everybody's wearing the city shirts, which is it's funny because they're not a San Francisco team. They play in Oakland, but they're borrowing them, you know, here in the city. And everywhere you go, it was just joy and jubilation and really counting their chickens before they were hatched, being up 3-1 like that. And today I've been around the city a bit, and it is real quiet, super quiet.
There are kids in Africa that are going to get an assortment of back-to-back World Championship commemorative Golden State Warrior T-shirts by, what, Friday, Saturday? Blue ones, white ones, yellow ones. But anyway, let's get started. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to call in, the number, 347-215-7598, and get your tweets in at Steve UCN Live and at Gabriel underscore Montoya. Again, we're here for at least 90 minutes going all the way up to 2 hours. Let's get started with round number one on CBS from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. Welterweight in action. Keith Thurman takes on Sean Porter, and your co-feature, Jared Hurd, takes on Oscar Molina in a junior middleweight battle. Abner Marv has been scratched from this fight due to a medical condition deemed by the New York State Athletic Commission. Gabe, check out this statistic, and this is just me laying out a fact. It's not an opinion. Sean Porter has not fought in 365 days. Keith Thurman last fought July 11th. In your opinion, what effect does this have on this fight?
I think it makes it so this fight isn't as potentially will not be as good as it could be. You know, iron sharpens iron. Nobody ever got better sitting on the bench, not fighting, not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And you got to be out there, even if you're facing PBC level opponents. At least you're making weight. You're fighting often. You know, a lot of things come into question. How are these guys going to make weight? How are they going to perform on the night of the fight? Are they going to be super sharp, or is it going to take a while? All those things come into play. Did you outgrow the weight class, and you get to this week, and all of a sudden you can't make 47? We're going to find out. But sitting out a year is not good.
Yeah, Gabe, here's the issue. Physically, you're right. These guys, being in their mid-20s, physical primes, we don't know if they're going to make 147 comfortably. But let's assume that they both make weight. I thought both guys, for as good athletes as they are, technically they're a tad flawed. They're not what I'd call supreme stylists. They do make mistakes. And yes, you can be in the gym. Yes, you can do sparring sessions. Yes, you can stay in shape. But until you face live bullets consistently, it's really hard to improve technically. And that's the concern that I have. And I think many of these fights in today's generation of boxing, the reason why the fights fail to live up to expectation, these guys simply are not active enough. And this game is all about timing, being in rhythm, finding a certain sync. And these guys, I'm assuming, aren't going to have it. Now, maybe once they get punched in the face a couple of times, it just becomes like another fight. Thurman Porter, I think, is a very tough fight. I think it's a toss-up in many directions. I think Thurman has better power, maybe better physical tools. But I get the sense that Porter is a little bit more of a grinder, and I think he's a little bit tougher. My gut feel is Porter wins and he guts out a tough, somewhat ugly 12-round decision.
That's where I'm leaning, and I'm watching just tape of these guys, even including their sparring session, which was a long time ago, and you can't really get a lot from sparring because you don't know who's holding back what. But I tend to think Sean, at his best, can be an in and out boxer, using his size or lack thereof in the fight. He's a strong guy, but he's not the tall guy in this fight. They're both 5'7", but Keith seems to me, he's 5'7 and a half, seems to be the taller man. I'm not sure what BoxRec, if that listing is correct for Sean Porter. I wonder, what other tools does Keith have? I mean, he can overpower guys, he can be stronger than them or fresher than them, as we saw in the Luis Collazo fight. He's got that nice right hand. I like his brain trust in Dan Birmingham. I think Dan's probably a better X's and O's guy than Kenny Porter, as the Kell Brook fight showed. They just weren't able to make any adjustments. But they bounced back. I thought Sean Porter looked really good against Adrian Broner. That put him in position for this fight. I think he's a guy that's still learning on the job and is able to grow. So I tend to agree with you that he's going to be busy, even if it's not all clean punching. It could just be arms, shoulders, wherever, top of the head. I think that the danger here for Thurman is that when that right hand lands, if nothing really significant happens, what else has he got? Is he going to be able to live with that jab and out jab Sean? Sean's got a good jab and goes to the body well and is physical and it works when he's inside. So I tend to lean with your pick, Steve, and go with Sean Porter by ugly decision.
So there it is, your main event on Saturday night, Thurman versus Porter. The co-feature was supposed to be Abner Mares. It was announced late last week that Abner Mares was basically pulled from this fight due to a medical condition with the New York State Athletic Commission. The word is that Mares, if you recall, about 7-8 years ago, had a detached retina that kept him out and threatened his career, and that this may have been the issue, so he will not be fighting Jesus Cuellar. It was announced on Monday that your new co-feature opening up this broadcast will be a junior middleweight scrap between Jarrett Hurd and Oscar Molina. Gabe, I remember watching Hurd late last year, I believe it was November, and thinking to myself, this kid is slick and he has a lot of tools. I think this is a golden opportunity for Jarrett Hurd to really show his skills.
You got to step up in these moments. I mean, that's fighters fight, right? And everybody else, complains and looks for dates and looks for excuses. This kid looks like the goods, and I'm not sure if this is the matchup to bring it all out, but it's certainly an opportunity for him to be showcased, as you said. And so step into the lights and see, that's another dimension. How do you perform on the big stage? Are you ready for this moment? I'm excited to see the guy. I thought Cuellar Mares was a really good fight, man. I'm really bummed that it didn't happen. And I saw you tweeted about this. Do you think this is down to how strict the New York Commission is and that they screwed up in putting it there because this happened? Or is there some new development with Abner?
I am led to believe, and it's just my personal opinion, New York, as it relates to stuff like this, is probably tougher than most commissions. If you go back to the situation with Margarito and Cotto back in 2011, if it wasn't for the political strong-arming and the influence of Arum, I don't believe that fight would have happened. There were other situations. I remember Edwin Valerio, when he was just a relatively young prospect before he won his first world title, he was red flagged over a condition he had. So, again, I just find it interesting that Abner Mares and his team, knowing his past, knowing his history, would try to go to New York. And first of all, Mares Cuellar always had the look and feel of a West Coast fight anyway. My opinion, and it's nothing more than that, because I don't think anyone has interviewed Abner Mares or gotten anything on the record, I think he's going to fight again. I just will not be in the jurisdiction of New York. Gabe, Saturday afternoon from the United Kingdom. Showtime will have coverage of this for the IBF heavyweight title of the world. Anthony Joshua at 16-0. Dominic Brazil at 17-0. Gabe, I don't really know the math here, but combined, the these guys have 33 fights between them. I can't remember a major heavyweight title fight where there was such a low number of bouts between the two combatants. Really goes to show you, Anthony Joshua is still very much a prospect that just happens to have a belt.
Yeah, they really don't make title reigns like they used to, right? It's really strange, yeah, to see two guys with so little experience and so few questions asked. I mean, I think we know more about Dominic Brazil in some sense than we do about Anthony Joshua. He's a big, tall guy. You know, he's working with Daryl Hudson for strength this go around. I think for a couple fights now. You know, Manny Robles is the coach, who I like. I think he's a good young trainer. You know, but and I think in the next few years, he's gonna have some guys that are really gonna come to light that we're gonna be really excited about and be world champions. I don't think Dominic Brazil is one of those people. 81.5 inch reach to Joshua's 82 inch reach, and he's 6'6". But I just don't think he's got the tools. He doesn't have that strong front side offense, a jab that's gonna be able to get respect from Joshua. Ability, he tends to let guys come in close. Them bang away, and he doesn't keep that range, and that's what he's going to need to do with he's either going to be able to need to go inside and rough up Anthony Joshua, completely get out of range, because I think Joshua is most dangerous at mid to long, or he's going to have to dominate that outside, and I don't think he can do that. I think this is a 6 or 8 round knockout for Anthony Joshua.
Gabe, I'm on his record of saying if it gets past 4 rounds, I'd be surprised. I think Anthony Joshua is not just a cut above Brazil. I think he's 2 or 3 levels above him. Dominic Brazil, I thought, had a life-and-death experience with Amir Mansour. And if he doesn't land that punch where the guy basically almost bites his tongue off, he's probably 16-1. Again, I give him credit. He landed the punch. He hung in there. He got the job done. But Brazil, to me, is a guy that has even less experience than Anthony Joshua, and not the athlete, and doesn't have the technical acumen. And I still remember a couple years ago, he used to come in often to the wild card gym back then when Johnny Bray was training him. And even Johnny would tell me, this is a long-term project, that if it was up to him, I don't believe that Brazil would be taking on a Joshua so soon in this career. Well, Johnny Bray is no longer there. And Anthony Joshua and Eddie Hearn, think about it. If it was this much of a risk, would they have made this their first title defense? No. Much like if they would have felt that Charles Martin was a real threat to defend his IBF title, I don't think Joshua would have pulled the trigger a couple of months ago. I think Anthony Joshua, in every single way, is bigger, faster, stronger, better, sharper than Brazil, and I think he gets him out of there within the first 4 rounds. Gabe, it was truly an upset special this Saturday near Chicago, the PBC on NBC, and he's not average. Joe Smith with a stunning first-round knockout over Andres Fonfara. Gabe, I think we all have to come clean, unless you're Mitch Abramson. Everyone else, get your fork out and eat crow.
Yeah, and Shawny Monahan, you know, who knows a little thing or two about being a fighter. And Mitch, you know, he knows that East Coast scene, which, you know, I don't. I'll be honest, I didn't know much about Joe Smith. I didn't hit any of the gyms out there, and so I'm not plugged into that scene. And it more and more, if there's one thing I've liked about the PBC is we're starting to see a little more East Coast guys on these cards as they're scouring the earth to get filler for their fights. This one, you and I both blew it off, and if there's one thing, you know, like Monahan said and Abraham said, there's like, look, you know, you can't box wreck this. The guy, he was tough in the gym, seen him fight. He has real power, and that's his shot here. And he showed it. You know, and I like Fonfara, been a champion of his, but he's not without his flaws. And he has a long neck, and he keeps it upright when he's punching. He's right there to be countered. And, you know, somebody was saying to me after the fight on Twitter that, you know, Smith was on his way out before he landed that right hand. And I didn't say it back because I didn't want to be disrespectful, but I think that's what Fonfara is going to be telling himself for a long time to come. He seemed to have hurt Smith, who shelled up and moved back, but Smith said, like, I knew I had to punch with the guy and that he's open while he's going on the offensive. So, you know, I don't know how hurt he was, but That right hand certainly hurt from far, a thing of beauty. And I love the way he finished. Smith finished like a guy who expected to be there. He, in that position, you know, maybe even early, kept his distance, didn't get hit by anything stupid, and finished the guy off and folded him like a chair in the corner. I thought it was a good stoppage, too.
Von Farr has really developed into what we believe was a legitimate 175-pound contender. Makes for good TV, but let us not forget, long ago he was knocked out by Derek Finley, who was more of a natural 60. So we've seen him buzz, we've seen him hurt. And Von Farr did clip him with the left hook. I thought he hurt Joe Smith, but he made the cardinal sin. He walked straight towards a puncher, and punchers are dangerous and maybe most dangerous when they're hurt, and I thought he made a tactical and technical error. He didn't keep his head down as he moved close, and he didn't get his hands up. You can do one or the other, but you can't get away with not doing both. And as you saw what happened there, he's in an upright position. He didn't make himself small, as the trainers say, which is another way of saying bend at the knees, crouch down, and get your head down. Your head level has to be a little bit shorter and more compact. And with the way he was, up and down, he gave a straight pathway for that overhand right. And now Joe Smith, he is now a player at 175 pounds. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. And if you want to send us a tweet, you can do so at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. As always, let's go to our leadoff hitter and the newest columnist on UCN Live, the president, Andrew B. Kennedy. What do you guys see in the future for the winner of Thurman Porter? Also, how has their inactivity affected their careers, in your opinion? Gabe, we spoke about the inactivity just from a pure standpoint of what might happen this Saturday. From a marketing standpoint and a promotional perspective, I'll be honest with you, for a fight that's on CBS in Brooklyn, there really isn't all that much buzz. And there's that phrase we've repeated many times, out of sight, out of mind.
How can you get excited about something you don't see very often? You know, it's not like they're a Kubrick movie, you know, where every time they show up every 5 years, it's an event. You know, they're not exactly, you know, and Thurman, he calls himself a knockout artist. But, I mean, you know, it's been a little while. Colazzo didn't finish of his own volition. Jesus Cross back in 2013 was, you know, a TKO in 9, the stoppage of, you know, Julio Diaz in 3. But, I mean, these aren't exactly Trinidad highlights. And we had a distance fights with Leonard Bundu and Robert Guerrero. And all this stuff is parsed out. 2 fights in 2014. 2 fights in 2015. This is his first fight of 2016. And there was 2 fights, you know, 3 fights in 2013. I mean, this kind of inactivity, what are you really building? It's when people tell me that, you know, Al Heyman is a star maker and he's the best. Well, he may get you a lot of money so you can retire early and you're fighting some soft touches, some names at the right time so you can, you know, not get too beat up and have a nice resume. But I'm not seeing anybody being built into a superstar or even a recognizable name. I think it really has hurt their marketing. It's not like either guy is easy in an interview. I mean, they're very quotable guys. They're very personable guys. Their styles aren't terribly, you know, displeasing to watch. But if you don't fight often, then who cares?
When the PBC was first formed, me and you both heard from various people, Al's going to keep everybody busy. They're all going to fight at least 3 to 4 times a year. That was the Al Heyman version of George Bush. Read my lips. 2 fights a year. Also, in terms of the winner of Thurman Porter, Gabe, the winner, I think, will be subject to the usual rumors of Floyd Mayweather. Ugh. But I also think maybe, finally, does the winner maybe get in line for a Danny Garcia, Errol Spence? I mean, let's face it. You look at the PBC, a lot of that talent that they have is concentrated at 147. I would think the winner of this fight certainly places themselves at least near the head of that class.
Yeah, I would say so. I think the winner getting Spence maybe. Well, Spence has another interim fight coming up. That's what's strange is that Al's got this great stable at 147, and he seems to stagger their fights in a way that staggers the mind. It doesn't seem to be leading anywhere, right? I mean, if you had all these guys, why aren't you moving them in a way? But I think, you know, maybe the lawsuits had some effect there. You know, he was kind of maybe hiding the power or transferring the power to different promotional entities or waiting for Richard Schaefer to get back in the game and tell him what he thinks that they should do. I'm not sure, but it seems probably more likely that a Spence Jr. fight for the winner of this after an interim fight for all, you know, for the winner as well as Spence, that seems more likely to me than the usual Mayweather stuff. I just, until Floyd actually picks an opponent, I don't really give a shit.
Here's one from Joshua. Who's opening the new league / time buy, and when are you going to learn I'm always right? # Believeland. Yes, to the Victor Gold of Spoils, Joshua. My understanding is that there's a network that is currently televising boxing, and it is not the PBC. We'll be doing much more boxing in the upcoming months and year. Here's the problem. I'm not at liberty to discuss it yet, but it is going to happen. 347-215-7598. If you want to talk about Thurman Porter, review the shocking upset of Not Your Average Joe Smith. Later on in the show, we have news and notes and the fight preview. And, Gabe, going back quickly to a young man that you referenced a couple of minutes ago, Errol Spence, a very talented young man. He made the announcement on Saturday night on the NBC broadcast that he'll be fighting August 21st on NBC, which is a Sunday night, by the way, which I find interesting. And he's going to be fighting Tom Bob Anderson. Again, here you have this valuable spot, a very large platform, and it's Tom Bob Anderson as the dance partner. We just said it. They have a deep talent roster at 147. Why is it TBA?
Well, and why has Danny Garcia fought in January, and we have no idea when he's going to fight next? And it's almost July, Steve. What the hell? Why
well,
is he fighting around this time?
How about Danny Jacobs? Now, Danny Jacobs, we all thought, was going to fight July 30th as the co-feature to Frampton, Santa Cruz. It made sense, being that fight's in Brooklyn. Well, now we're hearing that it fight's going to be backed up. It might be backed up all the way, not to August, but to September. Gabe, we've spoken about this a lot the last couple of weeks. He fought 90 seconds, I believe, on December 5th. That was the day, night, afternoon of college football conference title games, right? So there's a possibility by the time he returns, it'll be the next college football season in progress. This is for a young man in his mid-20s coming off a 90-second fight, which I think could be considered the biggest victory of his career. As Aretha Franklin once said, who's zooming who? Gabe,
let's get to
the phone calls.
I mean, maybe it's good for the paycheck and everything, but, yeah, how do you know, what do you want to be remembered as? As a guy that lets somebody...
Hello, Gabe? Gabe, wherever you have cut out on us. So please come back. But anyway, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, can you hear me now?
Yes, the backup to the backup is working. 860, you're live on the next round.
Hey, how you guys doing, CT?
CT, where have you been?
I'm just working. I got promoted to being a supervisor. So.
Congratulations.
Thank you. thanks. I just want to talk about the Thurman and Porter fight this weekend. I'm going with Porter. I agree with what you guys are saying. I'm picking with Porter by late stoppage. I think Thurman hasn't faced a lot of athletic fighters, and I think due to Porter's athletic ability, his way to negate distance pretty well with his feet, I think he's going to make Thurman very uncomfortable on the inside. It's up to Thurman to try to get distance like he usually. You know, tries to do with his feet. I look at him as more of a defensive fighter using mobility, whether in slipping punches and dodging punches, kind of uses his athletic ability too, to negate punches with his feet movement to try to get out of the way to create distance. But I think Porter's going to, you know, also use feints to offset Thurman's timing because he relies a lot on counter punching. I think Porter's going to change up speeds, and I think he's just going to make a hell of a fight on the inside. It's going to make Thurman uncomfortable. And also, I noticed a lot that Thurman pulls back with his head, you know, pulls back with his head back a lot, and I think that's been the wrong time to do that against a fighter with an athletic ability like Porter. I see Porter stopping him late, you know, with a barrage of punches on the ropes, get him to the body, and stop him late, I want to say, around the 10th round.
Okay, CT, you are on the record. You know, I spoke with Kenny Porter today, the father trainer of Showtime, and I asked him, are you afraid of ring rust? And he says, no, because my son is disciplined. He firmly believes that out of the two fighters, Porter and Thurman, he has the guy that lives a better lifestyle. So this may be a fight where the lifestyles outside the ring play a factor. And again, Mr. Porter really believes my guy is much more disciplined.
And I wonder about that. You know, we never really fully got the explanation or a picture of the car x-rays for that injury. And we're seeing Danny Jacobs moved, and I don't know anything. I'm just speculating. But when you have a guy sit out, I'm just thinking of like Andre Ward. The guy sits out a long time. Most trainers will tell you this, strength coaches too. Guys are more prone to injury sitting around for a long time. And then, you know, like anything, you try to pick up the way you used to be, and you go a little bit too fast or too hard, and you tear yourself up, and you got to take a break. I don't know what happened with Thurman. Everybody's giving it a pass that it was the car, but it may have been something else that pushed it back, and they didn't want to play their hand with an actual, you know, injury in training or something. Who knows? But it's something to think about. And when you watch these guys over and over again, you're not getting the best possible athlete. No other athletes sit out for like a year like this. Most guys are, even runners, are doing little regional events, kind of building towards the big ones. It just makes no sense. But, you know, it's Al's world.
CT, anything else?
If I could just touch on real quick about the Joshua and Brazil fight. One thing I could say about Brazil, I think Joshua's going to win, but Brazil has shown the ability to handle adversity, whether it be like, you know, he's been knocked down two times that I've seen in fights. He's been able to deal with adversity. So not to say that he's on the same ability-wise, but he showed his mental toughness, and we only seen that once with Joshua. So I'm interested to see how it goes after a few rounds, maybe like the 5th round or so. But I'm picking Joshua by knockout. But I just think it's going to be a pretty interesting fight, I think.
All right, CT, thank you for rejoining us. Hey, and congratulations on the raise.
Thank you.
347-215-7598. We're here for at least another hour and maybe more championship rounds, depending on the calls. Gabe, who's next?
812, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Gabe and Steve, it's Joe from Indiana.
Joe, what's going on?
Hey, what's
on?
Up, Joe?
Hey, Steve. How you doing, Gabe? Steve, I got to give you a big shout-out, man, because you hooked me up with Jim Boone, man. He came in with one of those old classic Stockton to Malone assists last week. He texted me. No, he saved me, Steve, because, you know, I'm attending this Thurman Porter fight, and I got my tickets. I remember I told you guys this. I got them on pre-sale a while back, and I got row 11. That was the best available, row 11. Well, he texted me when I got off work Wednesday and said, Joe, Lou DiBella just released row 5 tickets for the same price that I paid for them. So I was freaking out, man. Anyway, long story short, I thought I got the bad end of the deal, but I called Ticketmaster, and they were able to do a ticket exchange for me. So now I got row 5 tickets, man. But I would have never known if Jim Boone didn't let me know.
You know,
so
no matter what,
thanks to him, man.
No matter what anyone will tell you in regards to that promotion, tickets are not moving all that well for this weekend at the Barclays Center. That's all I'm
going to
say.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing, man. I'm a little disappointed because, you know, I've been hyping up this fight for a long time. I'm real excited. I'm going to first time I'm going to attend like an actual weigh-in and a media workout and stuff like, not media workout, but just the actual weigh-in and then the fight itself. So I'm excited. I'm really I'm a big fan of Thurman. I've been following him when he first was, like, put on undercards back on HBO. So I really hope that he gets the TKO. That's my prediction. But, man, Porter's tough, man. It's going to be a good fight. And, Gabe and Steve, you guys really like that undercard that's replacing Player Morris? So I know you talked about it briefly.
Well,
but
I like Jared Hurd.
Decent...
Jared
okay,
Hurd,
like
stylistically, in the way he fights, reminds me a lot of a young James Toney. He's very slick, knows how to disappear right in front of you. Quick hands, and he seems to be a very, very accurate puncher. And he's facing a pretty good guy here in Oscar Molina. This is a solid matchup here.
Okay, great. And Steve, I saw that book that you said you've been reading, that Ali and Malcolm X book. They got it. I got to pick it up from the library actually tomorrow before I head out. Now, you said it was a pretty good read, right?
I enjoyed it. It's called Blood Brothers, and by the end of the book, I'll be as honest as possible without trying disrespectful. I came away with more respect for Malcolm X than Muhammad Ali in terms of the way they handled that relationship.
Okay, great. I can't wait to check that out. And, Steve, before I get out of here, Dave, this is a quick one for you, Steve. It's a basketball one. Do the Phoenix Suns trade for D'Angelo Russell this Thursday?
Yeah, that's to the Lakers to get that other top five pick.
Yes.
You know, I don't know. I don't know how good Russell is. I think Russell has some promise, but do I see a 10-time All-Star as it relates to D'Angelo Russell? Not sure about that. I don't know how good Russell's going to be. I know one thing. You shouldn't tell him any of your secrets in private, and that much is clear. Anyway, Joey,
thanks, guys.
You for the call.
Thanks a lot. Take care now. See you later.
Steve, did you happen to see Malcolm X's daughter speak at Muhammad Ali's funeral?
No, I did not. What
was
that?
Oh, I got to send that to you because I think it would be a great bookend for you. Dave Zirin, who does a great job for The Nation, he's their sports editor, and he writes kind of at the intersection of politics and sports. He does a podcast. But he did a transcript. He was like, you know, everywhere you went, you could get Bill Clinton and Billy Crystal, but nobody decided to do a transcript of hers. I actually found video of it too. I'll send them over to you because she talks about how, you know, at 19, Ali and her were reunited. He sought her out, and that Malcolm X, before he died, had forgiven Ali for basically turning his back on him, and there was a reconciliation that she was able to just kind of facilitate, you know, for her father on behalf of her deceased father. And it's pretty fascinating, and just her whole sermon eulogy was really spectacular. So I'll have to send that over along with my theory on or the article to the link. The theory of Jason Simpson may have actually committed the murders, but that's a whole other subject. I don't know if I was a little disappointed with Made in America that they didn't, just like the LAPD, they only looked at one suspect. There's a mountain of evidence, but if you've never checked out the Jason Simpson theory, I'll tell you, it'll blow your mind.
Yeah, I've heard about that. By the way, Bart Berry for 15rounds.com, one of the better scribes out there, his column today, the title, Thurman Porter, Trying for Enthusiasm. I think that says it all, Gabe.
Yeah, it's like it's a lot like, Alexander Bradley, in that we sat for a year, and it was weird. It was like everybody was so scared that something might happen to them, so we better not let them fight for a year, and somehow that's going to make for a better fight. It just goes against the whole theory. And, you know, the book that you turned me on to, the Only the Ring Was Square, Luda Bella has mentioned this before. I mentioned it to me in other places, that there's what Al is doing, a large manager having this, you know, a manager having this huge scale and kind of jobbing out to the promoters is similar to the way that used to be done in the old days. And granted, there was, you know, the promoters weren't always the ones that were signing a bunch of guys. And that Don King, Bob Arum, maybe ushered that in. But wasn't it like the matchmakers and the events that were booking, they were going to the manager,
yep,
and saying, we.
For Luda Bella to even try to couch that, again, that's kind of why I think Luda Bella, quite frankly, excuse my language, kids, close your ears, is full of shit. Let's go back to the calls.
All right. I just wanted to check that I was seeing that right. 530, you're live on the next round.
Good evening, Gabe and Steve. It's
Robbie.
Ringside
Welcome
Robbie
aboard.
Again.
What's up, man?
Hey, it's going good, and I'm a very depressed Warriors fan, but congratulations to Cleveland. First of all, Steve, you know, you bring up a lot of good points about the PBC. I mean, I'm a boxing junkie. I watch everything because, you know, like you, I have to talk about it every week. But it's kind of hard to really get behind any of these premier boxing champion guys because Al Heyman's strategy is, okay, I'm going to pay you real well, but you don't have to fight very often. I would much rather be behind a guy like Gennady Gennadyevich Golovkin, who is known to want to fight three or four times a year. Now, because he's moved up in levels and having difficulty getting fights, you know, he may go to twice a year, which is going to be disappointing. But, I mean, Keith Thurman and Sean Porter, you know, being out of the ring for, you know, almost a year or over a year in some cases. Danny Jacobs not fighting until September. How in the world do you get behind any of these people? I mean, you have to make your fighters more active, or is this the 21st century and we're no longer going to see guys like Golovkin fighting three or four times a year?
You know, I think you're going to have fighters and promoters who are willing to make sacrifices. I think from a fighter perspective, you better have guys like Golovkin who absolutely make it clear to their handlers, you're going to keep me as active as possible, okay? Because, again, we can blame a lot of people, but we got to start blaming the fighters themselves. Do you want to do this job or not? And then, two, you better have some promoters that are willing to make their own financial sacrifices, like an Arum, for better or worse, willing to reach into his own pocket and take a financial risk on things such as pay-per-views.
Yeah, that's very true. As far as this weekend's fights, Joshua is going to dump Brazil as soon as possible. I have never been and never will be a Dominic Brazil supporter. He was very lucky to survive Amir Mansour, who's like 43, 44 years old. He is not going to survive Anthony Joshua. And I do – look, I like both guys. I like Keith Thurman. I like Sean Porter. But at the end of the day, I think Sean Porter is going to show that he's tougher, and he's going to pull out a very difficult, probably split decision on the cards, knowing the way the judges work these days.
I think it's going to be kind of an ugly, grind-em-out fight. I don't think – listen, here's what's going to happen. If it's anywhere near a decent fight, the pom-pom waivers are going to make you believe that Thurman Porter is the Hearns Leonard of 2016. Now, as for the heavyweight fight, I'm on record. I do not see that fight going more than four or five rounds. I would actually be surprised if the ring card girls had to do their jobs more than once or twice in that fight.
That is correct. No, and Al Heyman is doing a nice job in cashing out his suspect heavyweights in Charles Martin and Anthony and Dominic Brazil. It'll be interesting to see who's next for Joshua once he disposes of Brazil. You know, I'm sure that Al's got a few more heavyweights he could send over there.
See, Gerald Washington?
Yeah, there you go.
How about that one?
Yeah, there you go. No, you know, I think the fights are going to be good this weekend, but I never really thought about it till you brought it up about the inactivity of all these fighters. I mean, like Gabriel said, we have not seen any proof of any accident. I wonder if this is a ploy that Thurman and his camp came up with for some other reason and they just didn't want to tell the public.
Would you put it past them, Gabe?
I mean, it's boxing, so no. I don't put anything past anybody. But, you know, I mean, I don't know Thurman to be a liar, but I mean, certainly Al doesn't make me think that I should trust him. He doesn't tell anybody anything. Kind of out, you know. There it is.
Yeah, well, hopefully we have good fights to watch this weekend, and as usual, it's been great to talk to you guys.
Robbie, thank you very much. 347-215-7599. Nate at a quarter till. We'll go through some news and notes. Gabe, who's next?
510, you're live on the next round. 510.
Hello.
Anybody?
Or not.
All right. Let's go overseas. 442, you're live on the next round.
Hey guys, it's Ed from the UK. How you doing?
Ed, what's going
up?
On?
Yeah, doing good, guys. Doing good. I just wanted to concur, guys. Gabe, I'll be shocked shitless if Brazil goes more than 2 or 3 rounds in that fight. If it goes 6 to 8, I will officially pat you on the back from overseas, sir, because that's quite some pick. I just wanted to ask guys actually, the upcoming Fury Klitschko rematch. I'm hearing a lot of people actually favouring Vladimir Klitschko, which I just wanted to bring up something. To my knowledge, he has never, ever fought well overseas in any bout that I can recall. Now, he's older. He's fighting a guy who befuddled him the first time round. And people are saying things like, oh, well, all he has to do is let his hands go. But if you actually watch those fights where he's looked like shit, he doesn't throw punches if you move. And he didn't throw punches because he had no target to punch at.
Right.
I mean,
Ed, Klitschko look like a guy, and again, maybe he had a bad night, maybe we're wrong. He had problems pulling the trigger for 36 minutes against Tyson Fury.
He didn't pull the trigger
what
for 36
changes?
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, and when he started to throw more punches in the later rounds, that's when he started getting hurt. If you actually watch the last 2 rounds in that fight, he had a couple of wobbly moments. So, I mean, I don't get this. Everyone's saying, oh, but Tyson Fury was really out of shape at the press conference. Listen, I'm a pretty thin, pretty, you know, fairly ripped guy for a non-athlete. But I have a belly if I choose to stick it out because I used to be a fat kid, which is what Tyson Fury also has. If you look at videos of him, he is in tremendous shape for a guy that size. And I don't really get it. If you're talking about if Klitschko has performed badly overseas in the past in non-hostile venues, can you imagine what it's going to be like for him in Manchester? I mean, he's a naturally intimidated guy anyway. Do you concur with my line of thought in this? Because I just don't
yes.
see it.
Yes,
I
mean, Ed.
I'm leaning towards Fury by knockout.
Yeah.
Because I think Vlad's
yeah.
going to have to be a little more aggressive, and I think he's going to walk into something. I think Fury's going to be ready for that. I mean, he played the spoiler style, but when the tempo kind of stretched, you know, stepped up a little bit, and Fury was a little bit tired from all the movement, and Vlad tried to assert himself, I thought Fury did very well. And he's just got awkward style that's always going to trouble Vlad. And I just don't see Vlad, like you say, out of his element, out of his.
I mean, in Manchester, that is
element,
the worst
in Manchester.
Place for an overseas guy to come to. The worst place. I'm telling you, of all the venues
yeah.
that we've got over here, you do not want to go to Manchester because Northern fans are different from South fans.
I don't buy this. That Tyson Fury doesn't give a damn anymore. I've achieved my goal. I really don't love this. I don't buy that for one moment. I think he's an athlete. He's a competitor. I think he has pride. I think he's taken a lot of stick, as you people say out there, on his way up. You know what? I get the sense he has athletic pride just like many other boxers at that level. I don't think he's just going to hand over his belt back to Mr. 100%. Klitschko.
And he's doing it on purpose anyway, because the first fight, Klitschko was so obviously intimidated once they got in the ring, because he's a nut job. He's crazy, right? And he's doing it way, way worse this time. Way worse. I mean, he was talking, I don't know if you've seen the face-to-face,
yeah.
but you should watch that, because you will laugh. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, it's brutal, isn't it? And just saying, well, if he knocks me out, that would be great, because then I can just retire and I can say, well, I beat him the first time. It's like, what the fuck does that mean? In all seriousness, man. But, I just wanted to get that in, because I'm getting, I just think it's bizarre the way people are talking about how Klitschko's going to let his punches go and fight a different style.
He doesn't let Klitschko get any of his rhetoric in, which is great in the interview.
Yeah.
Like, Klitschko's trying to, I beat... I let myself lose. Well, what do you mean you let yourself lose? He just presses it. He's almost a better reporter than most on the beat in terms of follow up on the question and getting a real answer, and not letting Klitschko just, you know, hit him with like, this is my slogan for this press conference. It's pretty masterful stuff.
He's brutal. I mean, I'm not trying to sacrilege or anything here, but you talk about, you know, Ali passing, and you've got this guy coming around at sort of, you know, the same year, who's absolutely such a mouthy guy. He is really super smart, you know, and it shows in the ring because he is a smart fighter, regardless of how awkward he is. But,
is there for the Kell Brook-Jesse Vargas fight?
Yeah, I was going to tell that to you guys last week, but I had to go out of town. Not a lot. And I got to be honest, guys, I think Vargas is going to bring a real good effort, but I think we're talking about leagues here, and I think he's going to be real spirited for four, five, six rounds, but Kell Brook is an above-average puncher, and he's extremely accurate, and Jesse Vargas does not have good defense. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I think Vargas will give a very good effort, but I've said for a while, I think me and Gabe have championed his cause. I think Kell Brook is the best welterweight in the world, if indeed Mayweather and Pacquiao are retired.
Yeah, and I would pick him to beat Manny Pacquiao at this stage. I agree with you guys, and I also think he's got the size to go up to 54 if he wanted to. But, yeah, that's pretty much all I had to say. Fellas, thanks very much.
As always, thank you for joining us. Okay, moving on to some news and notes. September 17th, now that Golden Boy, to a certain degree, is out of the woods with the litigation with All-Star Boxing, Saul Alvarez will be fighting September 17th against TBA. Looks like it'll be either in Dallas, Las Vegas, even New York. They put a hold on that, but quite frankly, I think that's very, very doubtful. And November 19th, from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Sergey Kovalev, Andre Ward. Gabe, Ward-Kovalev is a hell of a matchup. But I got to question this. I've been to that T-Mobile venue. It is big and it's cavernous. I don't know. Are they better off just going to the Mandalay Bay where there's 12,000 seats?
Why do they have to go to Vegas?
Good question.
You know, it's not a Vegas fight. It's like Vegas has become this thing that you do to say that you're at a certain status. What about filling seats? You know, Canelo Alvarez is one of the few guys that can, and Triple G, the two guys that can kind of go around just about anywhere. Imagine if either of them said, you know what, I want to fight in Montreal next fight. They would do well, because they've built their brand, they fought consistently. I don't understand why this fight is there. I mean, I guess you can't do it in Oakland because Andre will have all the home field advantage. Can't do it on the East Coast. I don't know. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well,
I guess Vegas is just your default. But
the problem
right
with New York is that they have that new insurance issue, which makes it very problematic for any promoter to put on shows. Also, it's very expensive at the Garden, the rent, you got the union. And the MGM Grand, Richard Sturm, really wants to make an investment into Kovalev. But, again, I was there last summer when Kovalev fought Najib Mohammadi. And, again, I understand, different level of matchup. There was literally just a few thousand people there, and I think a lot of those were given away. Now, this is a very good matchup, but I've said this for years, Gabe. If it ain't Pacquiao or Mayweather – or Canelo, most events in Las Vegas don't do all that well. You're either going to the big room of the MGM Grand with those three names, or you're going to the Cosmopolitan Ballroom. There is like no middle class of fights. I just really have my doubts over the commercial success of this event. Also, Gabe, I'm hearing more and more rumblings that Gennady Golovkin, who I believe will not fight Saul Alvarez till 2017, hopefully, maybe going to the UK in late August against Chris Eubank Jr. If that comes to fruition, I think that's a great move from K2, because When you're dealt lemons, what do? You make lemonade. And I think to fight a well-known guy who's willing to step up and to expand your name and your brand and your marketability, I think the people in the U.K. would be very excited to see Gennady Golovkin on their turf.
Especially, you know, because when you bring up, or I bring up, anybody brings up Gennady Golovkin in the U.K., with those Monaco cards, you could say, yeah, but it was a 900-seat venue. You know, it wasn't on the same level. But now, to go over there, if you fight in, you know, a major venue, do really well against, you know, that's a known opponent, and the guy's ranked number two in both the WBC, which Golovkin now holds, and the WBA, which Golovkin is his original belt. So the fight makes sense on every level. And then you can come back to Canelo and go, look, this whole 60-40 or 70-30 thing is getting actually a little closer, because I actually now am a true world champion. I can fight in the UK. I think it's great, and I like the fight too. I mean, it's a little early. I don't think Eubank is ready for him. He's got some physical gifts, and he's got his dad. That's a hell of a brain trust. So let's see it.
And you know the father will do a hell of a job with the media. He will be –
and with Gennady. Yeah,
he will be a reporter's dream because, and I say this with all being very complimentary, Eubank Jr. is zany. He don't give a damn. He's one of these characters that could only exist on Bash Boulevard. Couple of tweets here. Here's one from Coach Larry. Any truth to the rumor that Thurman will play the national anthem on a piccolo before the fight? We'll look into it. We'll call our sources. And here's one from Sanch. What is the 411 on Gennady Golovkin's next fight? Well, we just spoke about that. And who's televising Vargas versus Brook in the States? Sanch, according to Bob Arum, they will be talking to Peter Nelson of HBO. And also, here's one from Rian. Any more info on Richard Schaefer / Ringstar Sports LLC? Gabe, don't know if you saw my tweet last week, but Richard Schaefer, don't know if we want to say he's back. I don't know if he ever left, but he's formed his own company called Ringstar Sports, and he has already been licensed in California and New York, and I believe he'll be applying for his license in Nevada. I'm getting the sense he will not be running Mayweather Promotions. He will be running his own company, and, of course, the fighters will be provided for by one Alan Heyman.
Good luck with that. My feelings are really clear on Richard Schaefer. I think he's kind of a bad guy. Just my own personal dealing with him, I've seen the smile and I've seen the scowl. You know, I've received the threats for doing my job. And you know, as media guys, everybody should be a little worried and not looking to smile and be his buddy, but to keep an eye on his ass. Look what he did to Oscar. We can't ignore that.
Yeah.
Or tried to do to Oscar, you know, and they reached a deal. So, you know, welcome back. He becomes free game again. I hope he still has the same cell number.
347-215-7598. Gabe, let's go back to the phone lines.
Like he probably wouldn't answer it. You know, what I think is funny about Chris Eubank, though, is like as nutty as he seems to be, he's probably the most well-dressed guy in boxing. He wears
all
some
time,
sweet outfits.
In a corner.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got serious, like, there's fashion and then there's style. You know, it's like
Joe Goosen used to be number one. He is now a distant second. And I think
Joe would even admit
that.
So, you know, it's proof that if you're really well-dressed like that, you know, you can say some crazy shit and get away with it. 650, you're live on the next round. 650? Boom, you're gone. 323. You're live on the next round. 3-2-3.
Hello, guys. It's Dave the Mailman.
Dave, what's going on? You always deliver. What's going on?
Always, just on a hot day like this to try to kill out here.
Oh, my God. I hope you have some Gatorade with you.
I got some Gatorade. I got some Powerade. Everything.
All right, well, stay hydrated. Stay hydrated.
Listen, I don't know if you guys seen all of a sudden with the Lomachenko win. All of a sudden, the demographic is saying that Walter should get even money with them. I can't believe I wasted my time hearing other boxing podcasts. I'll never do that again. But I put my ear on one or two of the podcasts, and they were talking how the demographic was trying to defend Walter's avoiding the money and at the same time kind of like forgetting that Lomachenko said, you know, that he would bet on some of his money out of his own, you know, purse to make the fight happen. It's incredible, man. You know,
the bottom line is very simple. Nicholas Walters, last year, I was there, didn't make weight, lost his belt on the scales, didn't look overwhelming against Miguel Mariaga. Then he didn't look overwhelming against Jason Sosa in what was his 130-pound debut. He's not a big draw, doesn't have a belt. Tell me where, and he had the fight, Lomachenko was willing to bet some of his own purse to satisfy his financial demands. How can anyone defend the Axeman currently?
You know, I couldn't believe what the demographic came to defending the Axeman was saying that his HBO view numbers were like 20,000 higher than Lomachenko's, and that's why you should get even money. I had one more question, guys. I don't know why I guess it's from another path, but the way they're trying to pump up Porter Thurman, it's just, I can't believe the way they're pumping it. They're making it pump like it's a big fight, but to me, it's a bad fight for TV. That's how I see it. And thank you, guys.
All right, Dave. Thank you very much. Yeah, Lomachenko obviously has a lot of buzz on him, Gabe. Whether that's premature, we'll find out. But I think he's willing to put in the work and consistently go out there more than he has been. Let's hope that comes to fruition. But there's a lot of names at 130, and I'll be honest with you, Gabe. Well, all these fights that I want to see, if Axeman decides to kind of stay on the sidelines, I don't think it'd really bother me or that many other people. Go ahead.
No, you know, I was rewatching Sosa Walters, and I'm like, today, you know, because he's fighting Javier Fortuna, and I'm like, this guy shouldn't be making any demands. This fight doesn't, you know, you're only as good as your last fight, especially when you missed weight and lost your belt, and so you lost your status. And then you turn in a middling draw performance and complain about getting robbed. Like, it's just all negative. Like, what's in it for me? So I like to see the guy in the mix. You know, he's a good, strong fighter, solid guy, but at the same time, I don't miss him if the game moves on, and it will.
347-215-7598. We'll be here all the way till 8:30 Eastern time, depending on your calls. You know what? We might even cut it short. Folks, let's face it. It's hot out there. Gabe, who's next?
I just like that we got a Dave the mailman walking around while delivering, going, you know, complaining about the demographic. That's just a great image. 805. You're live on the next round. Nacho?
Hello.
Nacho? 805?
Oh, boy.
I can kind of hear Carr.
Yeah, so can 707.
I. 707. 707? You're live on the next round. 707.
Hello? Or not.
Somebody's packaging up some things, and boom, right on time.
Hello?
978.
Yes, who
Jimmy's
is that?
Corner.
Hey. Gentlemen,
Jimmy, what's going on? Everybody,
guys,
pull up a stool. It's Jimmy's Corner.
What's going on, gentlemen? Yeah, hey, listen, Saturday night, wow, you know, people, you can tell with stops or any kind of serious, anybody could punch on boxing. Twitter went a little crazy with Joe, not the average Smith, huh?
Say what you want. It's always exhilarating when a underdog who's given very little chance to win actually does it. And to do it in that fashion, I've always been excited by those type of things. As Larry Merchant says, it's why you fight the fights.
Exactly. No, I was pumped for him. Comes from a big family. From what I read about him, seems like a good kid. But let's be honest. I mean, in my opinion, I just think he's a very limited kid. Fights very stiff. The ultimate, you know, not too much head movement. I don't know. I didn't think it was that great of a shot because I just didn't rate Fonfire that high. But I'm curious to see what this kid does. I don't think Kovalev is shitting in his pants, but, you know, I'm curious to see. And I want to say, too, about the Vargas thing, I'm with him. I don't know, man. The week they announced Vargas was fighting Brook, you know, you got Rukachacha his name in Triple G, and then next thing you know, you find out he's fighting the eighth ranked welterweight. I think Vargas is a tough kid. He's going to come in, like you said, give it his all, but Brook is just, and I quarrel with you guys, as the best in the welterweight division.
What Ed said about that fight, you know, that it's going to be good for six rounds. But with Jesse, I'm curious which six it's going to be. Sometimes he starts strong and fades late. Other times he comes on late. But he always lets it hang out. I want to see Brook. He's been fighting soft touches as much as I think he's a class of the division. Jesse's got world-class experience. He doesn't have the eraser. So I'm curious. You know, I think Brook beats him. But I don't think it's a walkover.
I don't know. If I'm not mistaken, Brook is actually – he's a big welterweight too, right? Is he on the bigger side?
Very big. Looking at recent pictures – he looks like a guy that may not be long for 147.
Yeah, wow, he jumped up to 154. It's a tight division now. On my theory on, like you guys said, about Klitschko, now that night when I watched that fight, you know when, like, a fighter pilot has to come and land on a deck of a carrier, and if anything goes wrong, they can't just, like, make a small adjustment. They have to pull up, go all the way around, and come in for another pass. It was like that. His trajectory, if it went off even a little bit, it's like, oh, shit, he had to get in his stance. It was just nuts the way if everything wasn't perfect. So I don't see how it's going to be much of a difference. But in the big fight coming up this weekend, to be honest with you, I don't buy the hype on that one at all. I think, first off, since he hasn't knocked anybody else since Soto rung his bell, And I think it changed him that night. I think he changed as a fighter. I think he started to try to be cuter instead of getting what, you know, Thurman what got him there. He just, you know, hard nose, come forward, throw the bombs. And with Porter's style, I don't know. I don't see it to be a very fan-friendly fight. I think it's going to be sloppy. Do you know who's reffing that?
No, I don't. And going back to Thurman, I was there the night he beat Soto Carras, and he got buzzed literally in the first 15 seconds with a hard overhand right. If you go from that fight and you look at the way he fought coming into that fight and after it, let me tell you something. That one punch changed his approach to professional boxing.
I 100% agree. I've said that all along. He's not been the same guy. And if he comes in, I don't know. I don't know. You know, of course, it has the PVC paint to it, so I always have a hard time getting up anything with that. But, not overly pumped for that either. It should have happened 6 months ago. But, you know, because he had his whiplash because he was – something like that when there's no pitches, like Gabe, like you said, no evidence. Come on. Well, I mean, just be honest about one thing. Just say, hey, we need more time to make weight. Or whatever the case may be, but that whole accident thing, it just put another bad taste in your mouth about the PBC and their non-transparency. Other than that, that's about it, guys. I just wanted to, and Lomachenko, too. I think, you know what, he's a smart enough kid. Steve, what do you think about this? Do you think he's a smart enough kid that he sees the hate Rigo gets and the reason why he gets it, and he sees Gennady, you know, the love he gets, obviously, because he knocks everybody out. I think his camp's smart enough to see that, and that's the reason why he performed the way he did. He knows, and look at, like, it's true, like you said, he knocked out Martinez, and all of a sudden, you know, he's on the top of everybody's list. So you think it's
Jimmy, you make a good point, because the day after the Martinez fight, I talked to his manager, who's most famous for having Sergey Kovalev, Igis Klimas, and Igis is the type of guy that, hey, he wants knockouts. He wants entertaining fighters. I don't even think he'd want to manage a guy like Rigondo. And I think it's a huge thing that instead of having a bunch of ass-kissing sycophants saying, you won, that's all that matters, these ugly Americans with their capitalism that you want to, you know, capitalize on, forget them, you won. No. I don't think there's any doubt Igis and everyone else involved is saying, guys, this is showbiz. The way you win, not just if you win, absolutely matters.
No, absolutely. And that's what, you know, that's what, hey, you don't, you miss the night. Remember when, like, Camacho would come in with the Indian suit? It was actually more personality back then. And it's like, wasn't it lost on him that, like you just said, out of all the sports, entertainment, I think sports entertainment, boxing, did you know there's only two guys has a lot to do with that? And the knockouts sell. And Lomachenko, I think, is going to start going that route. And if he does, it's just, you know, the sky's the limit. You know, I'm glad you straightened that out. I'm glad you told me that, because that's what I was thinking. But I know you guys having a what are you guys having, a heat wave out there, Steve?
Well, it's only 103 degrees on first day of
Holy
summer.
Shit. wow. Is that like, is it dry? Is it humid?
No, you know, it's actually a dry heat. But can I just tell you something? Anything above 95,
it's hot.
Whether it's dry or wet, it's hot. And but I like the hot weather. That just means for the next 5-6 months, I get to wear shorts and sandals. I'm good with it.
Right, nice. All right, gentlemen. Hey, listen, thanks for taking my call. Have a great week. We'll
Jimmy, as always, our pleasure. Gabe, here's a tweet from Augustin Juarez. Hey, guys, who took a bigger L this weekend, Fanfara, Mexico, or the Warriors? Gabe, I'm not a big soccer fan, but I was at the Sliderman's house on Saturday, and after the fights, we just switched over to the soccer game somehow. And when the score was already 3-0, we started to have a perverse pleasure in just watching this blowout. And Chile beat Mexico 7-0. That is like the equivalent of Georgia Tech beating Cumberland in that football game, 222-0. And I'm not going to lie to you, it's the most enjoyable, entertaining soccer game I've ever seen.
Wow.
But, yeah,
well,
it was the Warriors. It was still the Warriors. You blow a 3-1 lead with two of those games being at home. It's the Warriors. They took the bigger loss. And, by the way, speaking of Fanfara Smith, Gabe, a lot of people have been asking, did they give options to Fanfara's people, and is there a rematch clause? According to Joe DiGuardia, his answers were no and no.
Yeah, I think you got to move forward. I really like Joe Smith's post-fight interview. He kind of has this rocky way of talking. Just real simple dude, knew what he needed to do, pulled it off. Because I think it was so unexpected. They had a ton of time, and they let him talk for a long time. And it's just, it's boxing. That's why I watch boxing.
Speaking of which, when they first made the Hugo Centeno fight, and he has not fought in a while either, and I heard it was against a Polish guy in Chicago. I remember asking Eric Brown at the Wild Cards, like, Eric, you're not concerned about that? A Polish guy? In Chicago? Nah, nothing to worry about. They should have worried.
Yeah, that was a tough fight to watch, man. I like Hugo, and he bends at the waist way too much, goes underneath his waist with his head in this odd angle. Instead of bending his legs and having some position to be in that where he can return and see the shots. It's like he drops his eyes, and then it's just kind of a surprise whenever he comes back up. It just stands too tall sometimes. It doesn't really use it with a jackhammer jab. He just seemed listless in the fight. He just couldn't quite get off. It was just kind of a beatdown. I felt bad
for
him.
Not only that, he's never been the strongest guy, but his body on that particular night had the musculature of a slab of butter. He looked so soft, so flaccid.
Yeah.
I was just like, did you even train for this? Jeez.
Yeah, maybe he just made weight, you know. I mean, it happens, you know. That's the fighter's life, too, is that that's the thing. You've got to be ready. You've got to be in the gym, but you can't be stale. But you got to just be right there and ready to do your thing. And maybe he just dropped a ton of weight. I don't know. But he looked listless. Even the announcers were like, dude, he's not letting his hands go. And, you know, but, I mean, that's what you do, you know. Selecki, you know, just kept working. And he became the Polish victor that night. What a brutal thing for Fanfara. That's going to be a hard loss to come back from. But, you know, I mean, he's a tough guy. I expect him, you know, he's not a fast starter. It makes me wonder about him in the weight.
You know, first couple of months of this year, when I would see Hugo Centeno at the Wild Card, I'd ask him, so when are you going again? We have a fight schedule. He never had an answer. Just saying.
Mm. Yeah, that's tough. I'm curious. We got a couple calls, but I know you saw all five parts of OJ Made in America. What did you think, man? What was your takeaway from it? I saw a
couple
of
things. Al Cowings. He's either the world's greatest best friend or the world's worst enabler. I'm just fascinated by how, on one hand, he's crying at the services of Nicole, right? Like, what a great friend. Next thing you know, he's a getaway driver in the white Bronco. Hey, AC,
yeah.
Take a side. You can't be North and South. Come on. You're either a Blood or a Crip. Come on. Other
thing. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, and another thing. The guy was literally willing to take a bullet for OJ.
Yeah.
Side eye. That's all I got to say. Also, Carl Douglas, the attorney, that man needs his own talk show. He's hilarious. He is absolutely – I mean, honestly, if he agreed to come on to our podcast, he wouldn't even have to talk boxing. I just want to throw questions at him. Seriously.
Yeah.
Also, I found in retrospect – the blind support of OJ, disgusting. And thumbs up to Reverend Whitlock, who flat out told the truth, and I'm guaranteeing he took a lot of heat for this based on the community that he serves. He said this was not a victory for Black America or the evening out of the justice system. This was a victory for a rich guy. And I said, sir, you have honor and integrity. And also my final takeaway is that I will never get out of my head OJ rapping as a pimp surrounded by white strippers. Wow. Wow.
Yeah,
rough,
there's a Radio Lab or a This American Life podcast about that whole You've Been Juiced show that's pretty fascinating. It's just, you know, how surreal. And he went to Miami. It was over. It was like a downward spiral. Then to Vegas, which is really just, you know, people think it's glamorous and glitzy. It's kind of like working, like I worked in Hollywood. You lived down in L.A. and in that area. It's not glamorous. It's kind of a dump, especially at night. And Vegas is a sordid place. And, you know, you're doing a lot of blow, and all of a sudden it ends up just, you know, like a bunch of dudes in a hotel room doing a bunch of blow and having some ideas. It felt like the end of Boogie Nights. Like, let's go get my memorabilia back. Just how far the guy fell. It's pretty tremendous. Like, from that point, just going backwards, that's where it starts with him in jail. And what he could have meant, what he kind of did mean to the African-American community, in one sense, shunning all the hard part, all the civil rights movement, standing with Jim Brown and Ali and you know, Kareem. But instead, he broke barriers by being the crossover into the white world. And, you know, and
Gabe,
that's...
You know what would have angered me if I was one of those people with those signs saying the juice is loose and free OJ? And again, I don't know if this is true, but if it is, that OJ, when he's being taken away from his house in handcuffs, and he sees all the people, and he said, what are all these ahem doing here? What an insult.
Yeah.
I mean, what an absolute insult. And it shows you what a narcissist he is. That every single picture in his house is of him. And unless you were Eric Dickerson or Marcus Allen, you had no room on that wall. You had to be a white celebrity to be in one of those pictures. And so they brought in pictures from the Cochran collection to brother him up. Again,
unbelievable.
Carl Douglas, please do a talk show. I would listen in every damn day.
Yeah. And you know, there's a couple things I didn't notice. And again, I'll refer you to the book about the Jason Simpson theory. But I never knew who it was that ran over up to the Bronco when they arrive at the house and the person starts attacking the driver, A.C. Cowlings. And it was Jason Simpson.
Yeah.
That came out there. And I always want to know what that exchange was about. It still leaves me with a lot of questions. I thought it was a little slanted towards he did it. And I also wondered if Fred Goldman didn't come across like kind of such a weird guy, his mustache and the glasses.
No, honestly, I have a lot of respect for Fred. Seeing your son go through that, and people say, well, he seems a little vindictive. Well, yeah, do you blame him?
His son got murdered. No, not
at
all.
I don't understand that. Wait, what's like be okay with it? And with the civil suit, you're not guaranteed to get the money. You have to be vigilant.
Yeah. No. I wondered if he seemed more likable. I could empathize with his plight, but he didn't come across as likable. If people would be behind him more. There's some kind of negativity towards him. But I felt for him. And just all the people involved, the agent, I thought was a character, was an interesting character. I didn't think, Bob Shapiro looked anything like John Travolta, but that's just quibbling.
I love how Bob Shapiro said, "I'm shocked that the race card was used." I'm like, really, Bob? Really? Bob, really? Are you serious? I mean, one last thing. I didn't realize they tore down OJ's mansion?
Yeah.
Why? Was it haunted or something? Is it like Amityville Horror? Why? It's not even like the murders happened there. It seemed like a perfectly good mansion to me. Why ruin it?
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't understand that.
Yeah,
jeez.
I mean, the kingdom is fully fallen now, man. I don't think anybody – who's fallen farther than that?
Wow. Isn't he – I think he's up for parole next year, so – may be more chapters in the OJ story. 347-215-7598. We still have about 15 minutes left remaining. Go ahead and give us a call, Gabe.
I'm going to go through a couple of blocked numbers. You're live on the next round. Block number? Hello? I can hear you. All right.
And he's blocking us.
Yeah, I guess so. Who's blocking who? Block number, you're live on the next round.
Hello.
All right.
Hello.
Oh. Hello. Hello.
Yes, who is this? Or not.
All right. 256, you're live on the next round. 256.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Can you hear me?
Yes, what's going on? Yes.
Hey, so is the block... Did the block take over for the fumble as far as in the bay? I think the block definitely has its spot in all lore because it was just ridiculous to watch him come from that far and just crush the whole Bay Area for that time. I was really
I
got to
tell you, though, the block was a great play. I think what's more demoralizing is some of those decisions Steph Curry made. Like, he's handling the ball – like it's a regular season game in January against Memphis. It's like, Steph,
it's kind of
important,
also,
game seven.
Also, Festus being in the game in the fourth quarter.
Ooh, he was bad. Whoa, he was bad. And Harrison Barnes, the Lakers are going to overpay that stiff to miss wide open looks 82 times a year. Ugh.
Yeah,
ugh.
I can't see it right now, but, it goes along with cleaning up the sport by promoting a two-time drug cheat on the main event.
Who would that be?
About to say. Mickey Bay. You know,
Jeez.
Now, really cleaning up the sport.
How excited are you for Thurman Porter this weekend?
It's okay. I mean, it's a fight that definitely is watchable. But it's not Hagler Hearn.
Whoa, hey, contain yourself, jeez.
I mean, in the whole scheme of things, it's not Gotti Ward. I mean, it's two guys. One guy already got beat, and he got, that fight wasn't as close as the judges had it. I had Brooke clearly outpointing him. He just kept him in range, and, Porter's a guy who's talented, but he smothers his punches.
That's the other issue I've always said about Sean Porter. He has a poor sense of distance, and he's always overshooting his punches, and he runs right into a lot of clinches, and it becomes chest-to-chest action. And quite frankly, it's not all that entertaining to watch.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, if your best wins are Malignaggi and Alexander, does that really make you a guy that should excite anybody? I mean, that's my whole thing about it. But any word, because, I might be in travel for a bit, in Usyk and Glowacki, is that going to be the 17th of September or the 10th?
I will find out from Tom Loeffler. I was actually asked that question earlier.
Yeah, because that's a good fight. And, are the tickets in Europe the same, kind of as far as price-wise as they are in the States?
I think they're a little bit cheaper because there's no casino element, but then I'm told that a lot of the brokers get the tickets right off the bat, meaning that they're jacked up from the beginning.
Right. If Lomachenko is really going to start sitting down on his punches with his skill set, Yeah, that puts him in a whole different realm as far as being somebody you really want to watch, because with his technical skills and the speed, he's going to connect anyway. So
no, he is.
And turn it over. It's,
and
it's
speaking of which, Javier Fortuna fights Jason Sosa in Asia this Friday. I'm told that Fortuna, should he win, will be a prime candidate because he's actually willing to face Lomachenko. Now, let me say this. If it is Fortuna as the first title defense for Lomachenko, I don't mind that at all. And let's say he stops Fortuna. In my opinion, guys, that's a hell of a victory.
Yeah. I mean, Fortuna's a quirky style, but he leaves his chin up.
He's got a good motor. He can fight deep into a fight and still maintain power. I think that quirkiness works for him. That's a good fight. I think it's an action fight. Somebody's getting knocked out, and I think he's got legit power too. Fortuna.
Yeah, I don't see Lomachenko getting knocked out. So
no,
yeah, it's not.
But you know, I mean,
pretty much has to knock out a guy to win a fight. And that's pretty much the only way he can win against a boxer. He's going to lose 9 times out of 10. Just the way I see it. It's kind of like Frotch versus Ward. Frotch, the only chance he had of beating Ward was knocking Ward out. So you saw how that played out.
Well, speaking of which, Andre Ward Kovalev, I don't know where you live, but do you have any inkling or inclination to go to that fight in Las Vegas November 19th?
Yes. Yes, yeah, so if I get a good deal and get out there and maybe get a ticket or something, I would love to go to that fight because it's that type of fight. I mean, it's a guy that's whoever wins is literally a top three guy and more than likely has punched his ticket to the Hall of Fame.
Mm. Yes,
so,
certainly a lot on the line. Listen, we got to get running, okay?
All right. Thanks, man.
Gabe, I understand we have a couple of more calls. Let's go through them.
552, you're live on the next round. 552.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up?
Hey, what up? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good. Talk boxing to us. What's going on?
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'm calling you from Mexico. Hey, so I was listening about the Lomachenko, man. That guy really impressed me over the weekend where he fought, man. Man, that guy's something special. Man, if he fights Walters, that's going to be a fight, man. What do you guys think?
Well, I know Lomachenko's willing. Until I see Nicholas Walters sign on the dotted line, and I think it's a fantasy fight.
Yeah. Plus, I think it'll be some of an advantage for Lomachenko because you know how Walters has been out for a while now. So if he does get some, you know, like with all that, with a long layoff, then it's going to be perfect for him. So he might as well want to jump into that, you know?
I don't disagree. Anything else we can do for you?
That's it, man. And yeah, Mexico's hurting about that loss.
Well, I mean, Mexico provided a lot of entertainment, giving up 7 goals. They did the impossible for me. They made soccer exciting. Anyway, thank you for the call. Here's a tweet from Evan Young. Fortuna is reckless, but with great reflexes and power. Sosa, pretty solid, though. Underdog valued as a 10-1. He actually kind of likes that a little bit. And also, Evan writes, Thurman is the more dynamic fighter and a better puncher. Porter is stronger, more durable, and works harder. Porter wins. And then completing the trifecta from Evan Young on OJ Made in America. OJ needed that love to feed on all the time. But for all his narcissistic ways and his blind, jealous rage, hey, he seemed like a cool guy.
Okay. Fun to party with. That's hilarious. 530, you're live on the next round.
Hi, guys. Just playing from Auburn.
Mike, what's going on?
What impact do you think, assuming that the Golovkin-Eubanks fight gets made, what impact does that likely have in terms of getting a Saunders fight made after that? Do you think that improves the chances by establishing a track record for Golovkin?
I do, and Mike, I think it does two things. I think it embarrasses B.J. Saunders, and it also takes away a potential opponent for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the British media and all the fans need to ask B.J., why is Eubank the one fighting Golovkin when you're the one with the title belt?
So very tactical.
Well, I think you answered the question right there. He's got a title belt. He wants to hold on to it and make some money, but it's, you know, what's he going to do with it? What is he doing with it? But I like the what do you think, Mike? Do you like the fight better, the Eubank fight, better than the Saunders fight for Triple G in terms of entertainment value?
Actually, from a pure fight standpoint, I think I'm more interested in the Eubank fight. I think Eubank is probably more physically talented than Saunders. Saunders, frankly, other than in the early round where he knocked Andy Lee down twice, didn't impress me the rest of the fight, and nor did Andy Lee. So I wasn't really that excited about the competitive nature of a Saunders-Golovkin fight. It was more achieving Golovkin's goals of getting that last title and then moving to whatever's next. But Eubanks, he's a little bit more interesting. I don't think he's likely to beat Golovkin, but at least it's an interesting fight for me.
I don't disagree.
I have another question from on a slightly different direction. What's going on with Gilbert Mendoza and the WBA making a requirement that Jacobs be the mandatory for Golovkin?
Mike, I put in a call or left a message for Gilberto Mendoza about that very same issue about a week and a half ago, and I haven't heard back from him.
Well, we're thinking alike on that one, Steve.
Yeah.
And that would be an interesting one. Let's take that one step further.
You know, next time I see Gilberto and I get along with him, I'll ask him the same question. At what point do you put the feet or the fire on the feet of Danny Jacobs?
And if that in fact happens, do you see that going to a purse bid?
No, I don't. I think they'll be able to. I think some of the stuff that existed last year in terms of the war chest of the PBC and Waddell and Reed, I don't think that happens anymore. Like, you know, last year main events kind of had egg on their face when they backed out of the purse bid for the WBC light heavyweight title. I don't see that stuff happening. And quite frankly, Al Heyman's been supplying a lot of opponents to a lot of HBO guys recently.
Yes, he has. But he's been supplying from his stable B-side opponents.
Right. Premier boxing cannon fodder.
Yeah, I don't know if he considers Danny Jacobs cannon fodder.
You know, he may
he
not, but if you're Danny Jacobs and you've made some comments and you're in this for the money, it doesn't have to be next per se, but is there a bigger fight out there for Jacobs than a Golovkin fight?
Oh, heck no.
Right.
Heck no. There's no bigger fight for any middleweight than a Golovkin fight. It's just the risk-reward perspective. So
Mike, how excited are you for Thurman Porter? Are you planning your whole Saturday around this fight?
Actually, I'm more excited about Joshua Brazil, not from a competitive standpoint, but from a standpoint of watching Joshua, who could become a very interesting fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, he's already a pretty interesting fighter, but he could become even more interesting if he turns out to be the real deal. And there's a lot to like about Anthony Joshua. And so I'm interested in that. In terms of the evening, well, let's put it this way. I watched the Joe Smith on Farah fight this Saturday, so I'm sure I'll watch the Thurman Porter fight. But it isn't a fight that gets my juices flowing too much. I think you covered what your points about Porter getting in too close, smothering his punching room, and in that sense not being as exciting a fighter as he could otherwise be, are very, very points well taken. I remember that very distinctly from the Broner fight. And Thurman, I agree with both you and Jimmy from Jimmy's Corner, that when he fought Soto Carras, he just hasn't been the same fighter. The one-time component of Thurman's game just hasn't been visible for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, Mike, listen, as always, we appreciate the call.
Take care, guys. Bye.
And Gabe, bye. Anyone else on the line?
562, you're live on the next round. 562.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Gabe. How's it going, guys? It's Lucas in Long Beach.
Good. What's going
hey, what's
on?
Up, man?
Hey, how's it going? I didn't get a chance to listen to the show live last week, but I was able to catch sort of the podcast of it later on. And there was something that was brought up that I kind of wanted to give my two cents on. I know some of the people on the show have called and sort of complaining about the HBO budget and how that's affecting boxing. And I think what gets lost is, you know, Peter Nelson has a boss, and then his boss probably has a boss, and then that boss probably has a boss or bosses, which is like a, you know, the board. And I think as boxing fans, we kind of forget that these individuals have to answer to other people. So, you know, the budget situation isn't necessarily entirely on Peter Nelson. All he's doing is just having to manage two different entities.
It's not as if Peter gets to decide his budget. I mean, he is an employee, and they say, Peter, this is your budget. And he doesn't just get to cavalierly add or subtract from it. I agree. A lot of the stuff, like somehow Peter Nelson is lobbying for less money, I think is beyond comprehension.
Yeah, and I know the talk with Spinoza over at Showtime, even though his budget probably is about the same or more, you know, he's had the benefit, luckily for him, in that, you know, he's been allowed to sort of pay his way out through some of the mistakes he's making in terms of budget. And, you know, just because he's allowed to do that doesn't mean that that's the reality for everybody else. He's just been lucky to be in a position where his boss has allowed him to, you know, screw up a little bit more and be able to throw bad money at somewhat decent good money or somewhat decent good fighters and events here and there. But in no way does that mean necessarily that, you know, what he's doing is anything better than what Peter Nelson might be doing, has done. All it just means is he's just gotten the chance to sort of, you know, spend his way out of some of his troubles.
Yeah, and guys, if you look at the ratings, HBO has played to a much bigger audience the last year or so. It's clear. If you just, again, not saying which fights are better, but if you look at the Nielsen ratings, HBO has many more eyeballs on them.
I think that, I mean, you know, it's always going to be the A-side network, you know, in terms of, and it seems the way everybody does their boxing anymore. It's very rare that the B-side pulls it out like Joe Smith did, which made why the fight was so exciting. I'm just wondering, you know, what point is this fully, at this point, Peter Nelson's reign? Does he still owe contracts to people?
I heard he does, Gabe.
He's working out. Well, yeah, so I think it may be another year before we really know what Peter Nelson's capable of.
Right. Anyway, listen, thank you for the call. Let's go through this real quickly, Gabe. The fight preview we talked about, Fortuna Sosa on Unimas Saturday night, the comeback of Mile High Mike Alvarado continues against Josh Torres. Then on NBC Sports Network, Justin Deloach and Ryan Cowboy Carl, they co-headline. And also on the UK on that undercard, George Groves takes on Martin Murray. Then Chris Eubank Jr. Stays busy. Anything there catches your eye there, Mr. Montoya?
Not a whole hell of a lot.
Very honest answer there.
Yeah, you know, I'll probably be seeing some theater. I would like to see the Porter Thurman fight live, so I probably have to schedule a play for another night. But you know, Justin Deloach might be somebody interesting. Eric De Leon's getting in work on that Mike Alvarado card. I like Eric, and he's still fighting 8-rounders. And you know, I wonder about his development. I think he's a solid fighter. He's one of the last guys, like Emmanuel Stewart, fostered him as an amateur, and I think worked with him briefly. And so I'm interested to see what happens with the kid. And I think he's got an action style, not a lot of power. I think Groves Murray might be a barn burner.
Good
yeah,
fight.
Yeah, I think it's a good, solid, like steak and potatoes kind of fight. I'm going with Murray in that one, and I got Fortuna as well. Although Sosa, that's good value for money.
So there you have it. That's it for this week's edition of The Next Round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.